The Hidden History of Verse 40, Number 3. The Sunday Law and the Prophetic Journey, from the Patriot Act to the Final Test. Key takeaways. This article discusses the prophetic implications of the Sunday Law in the United States, presenting it as the culmination of a series of events that began with the Patriot Act in 2001. It examines how these events align with biblical prophecy, emphasizing the erosion of constitutional principles and religious liberty. The narrative connects historical waymarks such as the Blair Bill of 1888 and the current socio-political landscape, illustrating a progressive repudiation of the Constitution. It calls for spiritual readiness, stressing that those who recognize and accept the prophetic message will be prepared to face the final crisis when the Sunday Law is enforced, marking the beginning of the end times. The Sunday Law is seen as the moment when the United States fully disconnects from righteousness, marking the beginning of Satan's final work. The progression toward the Sunday Law started with the Patriot Act in 2001, symbolizing a gradual erosion of the Constitution. The prophecy includes two lines, the political, Republican horn, and religious, Protestant horn, aspects of the United States, both leading to a church-state union. This period is marked by internal and external controversies within both the religious and political realms. Historical events such as the Blair Bill of 1888, the Patriot Act, and the political trials in 2022 are interconnected in the prophetic timeline. The Sunday Law is the final warning, likened to the abomination of desolation, that signals the time for God's people to flee from Babylon. The article emphasizes the need for spiritual vigilance, highlighting the latter rain as a period of purification and preparation for the final test. The latter rain began to sprinkle in 2001, testing believers to receive the light and be sealed for the end times. A final separation between the wise and foolish virgins will occur, with the wise walking in the light of God amidst the impending tribulation. The article urges the faithful to understand and internalize the prophetic word to navigate the coming persecution, and to be prepared for the marvelous work of Satan. By the decree enforcing the institution of the papacy in violation of the law of God, our nation will disconnect herself fully from righteousness. When Protestantism shall stretch her hand across the gulf to grasp the hand of the Roman power, when she shall reach over the abyss to clasp hands with spiritualism, when, under the influence of this threefold union, our country shall repudiate every principle of its constitution as a Protestant and Republican government, and shall make provision for the propagation of papal falsehoods and delusions, then we may know that the time has come for the marvelous working of Satan, and that the end is near. As the approach of the Roman armies was a sign to the disciples of the impending destruction of Jerusalem, so may this apostasy be a sign to us that the limit of God's forbearance is reached, that the measure of our nation's iniquity is full, and that the angel of mercy is about to take her flight, never to return. The people of God will then be plunged into those scenes of affliction and distress, which prophets have described as the time of Jacob's trouble. The cries of the faithful, persecuted ones, ascend to heaven. And as the blood of Abel cried from the ground, there are voices also crying to God from martyrs' graves, from the sepulchres of the sea, from mountain caverns, from convent vaults. How long, O Lord, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth? The Lord is doing his work. All heaven is astir. The judge of all the earth is soon to arise and vindicate his insulted authority. The mark of deliverance will be set upon the men who keep God's commandments, who revere his law, and who refuse the mark of the beast or of his image. God has revealed what is to take place in the last days, that his people may be prepared to stand against the tempest of opposition and wrath. Those who have been warned of the events before them are not to sit in calm expectation of the coming storm, comforting themselves that the Lord will shelter his faithful ones in the day of trouble. We are to be as men waiting for their Lord, not in idle expectancy, but in earnest work, with unwavering faith. It is no time now to allow our minds to be engrossed with things of minor importance. While men are sleeping, Satan is actively arranging matters so that the Lord's people may not have mercy or justice. The Sunday movement is now making its way in darkness. The leaders are concealing the true issue, and many who unite in the movement do not themselves see whither the undercurrent is tending. Its professions are mild and apparently Christian, but when it shall speak, it will reveal the spirit of the dragon. It is our duty to do all in our power to avert the threatened danger. We should endeavor to disarm prejudice by placing ourselves in a proper light before the people. We should bring before them the real question at issue, thus interposing the most effectual protest against measures to restrict liberty of conscience. We should search the scriptures and be able to give the reason for our faith. Says the prophet, "The wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand." Testimonies, Volume 5, 451, 452. When the Sunday movement shall speak, it will reveal the spirit of the dragon. The four paragraphs identify that at the Sunday Law, the United States will disconnect herself fully from righteousness. At the Sunday Law, the time has come for the marvelous working of Satan. At the Sunday Law, the threefold union is accomplished. At the Sunday Law, the United States repudiates every principle of its Constitution as a Protestant Republican government. And they also make provision for the propagation of papal falsehoods and delusions. That Sunday Law is a sign to us that the limit of God's forbearance is reached, that the measure of our nation's iniquity is full, and that the angel of mercy is about to take her flight, never to return. That sign was typified by the warning given by Jesus identifying the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet. It is there that prayer given by the martyrs of the fifth seal ask, "How long, O Lord, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth?" is accomplished. It is also at that waymark that the foolish and wise virgins manifest their characters. At the Sunday Law, the United States repudiates every principle of its Constitution. The period of time when this work was accomplished began with the Patriot Act in 2001. 2001, until the Sunday Law, represents a progressive work of repudiating the Constitution. That progressive work corresponds to the line of prophecy where the formation of the image of the beast is accomplished. The line of the image of the beast may appear a bit more complicated, but the complication is worth understanding. What complicates the line of the image of the beast is that it represents two lines. For the earth beast, the two lines are the horns of republicanism and Protestantism. Those two horns come together into a church-state relationship and thus fulfill the formation of the image of the beast. The line of the formation of the image of the beast, therefore, has two lines within the one line. For the Republican and Protestant horns run parallel to one another through history, but their individual lines also have their own prophetic testimony to bear. One prophetic line, with two parallel subjects, is more complicated than simply marking the waymarks of political actions that represent the speaking associated with the Constitution. The two lines of Republican and Protestant horns is further complicated by the prophetic fact that within the Republican horn is the history of the struggle between pro-slavery Democrats and anti-slavery Republicans. And further, that within the Protestant horn, there is a continual testing process that follows the wise and the foolish virgins within the history of the Protestant horn. Still, it is highly important to settle into these truths. Within the line represented by the earth beast's two horns is the parallel illustration of either forming a character of Christ or a character of Satan, which equates to either forming an image of Christ or an image of the beast. For in this context, the beast represents a created being in contrast with the Creator. The formation of these attributes is accomplished internally among all men, for when probation closes, there are only two classes. The formation is also accomplished externally with the alliance between the papal power and the United Nations. So the testing time for formation of the image of the beast began in 2001, and it ends at the Sunday Law in the United States. In that period of time, the prophetic history of the earth beast's two horns illustrates an internal and external controversy within their respective horns, whether it be religious or political, and also a struggle between the two horns themselves. The Sunday Law in the United States represents the warning to flee which Jesus identified as the abomination of desolation. The Sunday law in the United States is the conclusion of the period that began in 2001. The Patriot Act was the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel and identified by Jesus as a sign to flee from a coming destruction. The Patriot Act includes the Prophetic Light of 1888 and the Blair Bill. The Patriot Act then also prophetically contains the typification of the Sunday law, so the period from 2001 begins with the Sunday law as typified by 1888, Blair Bill, 2001, Patriot Act, and it ends with the Sunday law. The warning to flee the cities in 2001 typifies the warning to flee from Babylon at the Sunday law. The judgment brought upon the United States at the Sunday law typifies the judgment brought upon the entire world when Michael stands up and human probation closes. Christ's signature as Alpha and Omega is repeatedly represented within the truths represented by the Blair Bill in 1888, and all that 1888 represents, repeating in 2001. 2001, which was typified by 1888, represents not only the sign to flee as represented by the abomination of desolation, but it was also represented by 66 AD and the siege of Cestius. The siege of Titus in 70 AD represents the Sunday law in the United States. The Sunday law in the United States is represented by the year 321 and the first Sunday law of Constantine, and 538 represents when the last nation of the earth succumbs to the mark of the beast. 2001 is 1888, Cestius, and the year 66 AD. The Sunday law is Titus, and the years 70 and 321. 2001 is also the baptism of Jesus, and his descent in Revelation chapter 10 on August 11, 1840. All these symbols contribute to the line of the Constitution. The prophetic history of the United States runs parallel to the history of Adventism. In 1798, the papacy received its deadly wound, and 1798 was the time of the end, when the portion of the prophecies of Daniel that related to the history of the first and second angels of Revelation 14 was unsealed. There in 1798, Adventism's prophetic beginning is marked. And in 1798, the earth beast with lamb-like horns became the sixth kingdom of Bible prophecy. 1798 was preceded by three prophetic waymarks associated with the line of the earth beast, and therefore with the speaking of the United States and the Constitution of the United States. Those three waymarks were the Declaration of Independence, spoken in 1776, then the Constitution in 1798, and then the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798. Those three waymarks address the prophetic line of the Constitution and mark the beginning of the Sixth Kingdom of Bible Prophecy. The Sunday Law is the end of the Sixth Kingdom of Bible Prophecy's reign, and therefore there must be of prophetic necessity three waymarks that precede the end, as typified by the three waymarks that preceded the beginning. In 2001, at the fall of the towers, the Patriot Act is typified by the Blair Bill of 1888, along with the manifest rebellion of Adventism's leadership at the Minneapolis General Conference. A rebellion which an angel told Sister White was typified by the rebellion against Moses by Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, is also typified by the baptism of Christ in 27 AD, the restraint of Islam on August 11, 1840, and the Declaration of Independence in 1776. As well as the abomination of desolation, spoken by Daniel the prophet, as a sign to flee from the coming wrath, as represented by Cestius in 66 AD. If you can still remember that the line of prophecy we are now considering is the line of the Constitution of the United States, all of the aforementioned prophetic lines contribute to and establish the prophetic theme represented by the line of the Constitution. Yet the line which appears to be the most interconnected line is the line of the formation of the image of the beast. The image of the beast is an image of the papal beast, which is represented as a beast with a woman reigning over the beast, which is the combination of church and state, with the church in control of the relationship. In order for the United States to form an image to the beast, apostate Protestantism must so control the government to the point where the government will pass and enforce religious statutes and ultimately the Sunday law. As the process of forming the image of the beast is accomplished, the Constitution written with a premier principle which Thomas Jefferson penned as separation of church and state, is to be overturned. When the Protestant horn has the power to direct the Republican horn to enforce religious mandates, the very heart of the Constitution is torn apart. Thus you have the prophetic relationship between the line of the Constitution and the line of the image of the beast. The period where the image of the beast is formed began in 2001 with the Patriot Act, and it ends at the Sunday Law when the mark of the beast is enforced. During that period, the latter rain is sprinkled, for the latter rain begins to fall when the mighty angel of Revelation 18 descends and lightens the earth with his glory, which, according to Sister White, would occur when the great buildings of New York City were brought down by a touch of the Lord. The latter rain is to fall upon the people of God. A mighty angel is to come down from heaven, and the whole earth is to be lighted with his glory. Review and Herald, April 21, 1891. The period of the sprinkling of the latter rain represents a period of time when the wheat and tares of Adventism's last generation are being sifted and purged. That sifting and purging ends at the Sunday Law, and the wise virgins who possess the oil when the crisis of the Sunday Law arrives are sealed, and then the Holy Spirit is poured out without measure until Michael stands up and human probation closes. During the formation of the image of the beast in the United States, the latter rain will be sprinkling, and during the formation of the image of the beast in the world, the latter rain will be poured out without measure. In 2001, the testing of the Laodicean Seventh-day Adventist Church began, as typified by the Protestants of August 11, 1840, and by ancient Israel when Christ was baptized. The time of test is just upon us, for the loud cry of the third angel has already begun in the revelation of the righteousness of Christ, the sin-pardoning Redeemer. This is the beginning of the light of the angel whose glory shall fill the whole earth. Selected Messages, Book 1, 362. The final testing process for the former covenant people begins when the light of the angel of Revelation 18 begins to present his message. His message is also represented in the first three verses of chapter 18 of Revelation. And those three verses were, according to Sister White, fulfilled when the great buildings of New York City came down. The testing process then began, as represented by John in chapter 10 of Revelation. The test was whether you would take the little book that was in the angel's hand and then eat it. During this testing period, while the latter rain is being sprinkled, it is falling only upon those who choose to take the little book and eat it. Many have in a great measure failed to receive the former rain. They have not obtained all the benefits that God has thus provided for them. They expect that the lack will be supplied by the latter rain. When the richest abundance of grace shall be bestowed, they intend to open their hearts to receive it. They are making a terrible mistake. The work that God has begun in the human heart in giving his light and knowledge must be continually going forward. Every individual must realize his own necessity. The heart must be emptied of every defilement and cleansed for the indwelling of the Spirit. It was by the confession and forsaking of sin, by earnest prayer and consecration of themselves to God, that the early disciples prepared for the outpouring of the Holy Spirit on the day of Pentecost. The same work, only in greater degree, must be done now. Then the human agent had only to ask for the blessing and wait for the Lord to perfect the work concerning him. It is God who began the work, and he will finish his work, making man complete in Jesus Christ. But there must be no neglect of the grace represented by the former rain. Only those who are living up to the light they have will receive greater light. Unless we are daily advancing in the exemplification of the active Christian virtues, we shall not recognize the manifestations of the Holy Spirit in the latter rain. It may be falling on hearts all around us, but we shall not discern or receive it. Testimonies to Ministers, 506-507. Those who ate the message of 2001 were receiving a message appropriate for that period, but they were to be tested in order to manifest if they truly internalized the message into an experience prepared for the seal of God. In that period, the latter rain is therefore represented as sprinkling, for the wheat and tares are still together. Therefore, Sister White says, it may be falling on hearts all around us, but we shall not discern or receive it. When the wise are separated from the foolish, the latter rain is then poured out without measure, as it was at Pentecost, which typifies the Sunday law. Again, these parables teach that there is to be no probation after the judgment. When the work of the gospel is completed, there immediately follows the separation between the good and the evil, and the destiny of each class is forever fixed. Christ's Object Lessons 1:23. The period of the sprinkling of the latter rain, followed by a period when the latter rain is poured out without measure, are also illustrated as two periods where judgment is accomplished upon God's people. The first period of judgment upon God's people began with the house of God on September 11, 2001, and at the Sunday law judgment is then accomplished for God's other flock, who are responding to or rejecting the loud cry of the third angel that begins at the Sunday law in the United States and ends when Michael stands up and human probation closes. The two periods of the latter rain, which are also the two periods of the judgment, which begins with the house of God and then moves to God's other flock, are also the two periods of the formation of the image of the beast. Within the first of those two prophetic periods, when judgment is brought upon God's church and also the United States, is the very same history where the Republican horn and the Protestant horn are both judged. Right where Laodicean Adventism is spewed out of the mouth of the Lord, the United States fills its probationary cup, and national ruin is brought upon the nation, and Satan then appears and begins his marvelous work. The 144,000 are sealed and lifted up as an ensign at the Sunday law. We are informed that it is impossible to give any idea of the experience of the people of God who shall be alive upon the earth when celestial glory and a repetition of the persecutions of the past are blended. Satan is a diligent Bible student. He knows that his time is short, and he seeks at every point to counterwork the work of the Lord upon this earth. It is impossible to give any idea of the experience of the people of God who shall be alive upon the earth when celestial glory and a repetition of the persecutions of the past are blended. They will walk in the light proceeding from the throne of God. By means of the angels, there will be constant communication between heaven and earth, and Satan, surrounded by evil angels and claiming to be God, will work miracles of all kinds to deceive, if possible, the very elect. God's people will not find their safety in working miracles, for Satan will counterfeit the miracles that will be wrought. God's tried and tested people will find their power in the signs spoken of in Exodus 31:12-18. They are to take their stand on the living word, it is written. This is the only foundation upon which they can stand securely. Those who have broken their covenant with God will in that day be without God and without hope. Testimonies, Volume 9:16. The repetition of the persecutions of the past begins at the Sunday law in the United States, for Satan begins his marvelous work at that time, and the wise virgins who have already been tried and tested will then walk in the light proceeding from the throne of God. This will be accomplished through the work of angels, for by means of the angels there will be constant communication between heaven and earth. The anointed ones, standing by the Lord of the whole earth, have the position once given to Satan as covering cherub. By the holy beings surrounding his throne, the Lord keeps up a constant communication with the inhabitants of the earth. The golden oil represents the grace with which God keeps the lamps of believers supplied, that they shall not flicker and go out. Were it not that this holy oil is poured from heaven in the messages of God's Spirit, the agencies of evil would have entire control over men. God is dishonored when we do not receive the communications which he sends us. Thus we refuse the golden oil which he would pour into our souls to be communicated to those in darkness. When the call shall come, behold, the bridegroom cometh. Go ye out to meet him. Those who have not received the holy oil, who have not cherished the grace of Christ in their hearts, will find, like the foolish virgins, that they are not ready to meet their Lord. They have not in themselves the power to obtain the oil, and their lives are wrecked. But if God's Holy Spirit is asked for, if we plead as did Moses, show me thy glory, the love of God will be shed abroad in our hearts. Through the golden pipes, the golden oil will be communicated to us. not by might nor by power, but by my Spirit, saith the Lord of hosts. By receiving the bright beams of the Sun of Righteousness, God's children shine as lights in the world. Review and Herald, July 20, 1897. The wise are those who are sealed in Revelation chapter 7 and Ezekiel chapter 9, and who are contrasted with the foolish who dishonor the Lord by refusing the communications he sends. The foolish are those who have broken their covenant with God, who will in that day be without God and without hope. Those two classes were tested and brought to a point where they manifested their character based upon whether they accepted or rejected the message of the hour. The message of the hour, since September 11, 2001, has been the message of the latter rain. The message of the latter rain is recognized by the methodology of line upon line as set forth in Isaiah chapter 28. The methodology of line upon line is God's appointed method of biblical study. And therefore, to reject that methodology is not only to reject the message represented through the application of line upon line, from here a little and there a little, it is also to reject the giver of the methodology. Because of the inspired parameters revealed in the testing process that leads to the sealing of the 144,000, it is apparent that the only way a child of God can navigate through the history where celestial glory and a repetition of the persecutions of the past are blended, is to be in an experience where the light from the throne of God can be recognized. It must be recognized, or it is useless, and we are lost. We must not wait for the latter rain. It is coming upon all who will recognize and appropriate the dew and showers of grace that fall upon us. When we gather up the fragments of light, when we appreciate the sure mercies of God, who loves to have us trust Him, then every promise will be fulfilled. Isaiah 61:11 quoted, "The whole earth is to be filled with the glory of God." The Seventh-day Adventist Bible Commentary, Volume 7, 984. In the period that began when the angel of Revelation 18 fills the whole earth with his glory, beginning on September 11, 2001, the latter rain has only come upon those who have recognized and appropriated the dew and showers of grace that is falling upon us. The great mistake identified earlier by Sister White was when the foolish virgins thought they could wait until the latter rain was poured out without measure, for then they thought they could catch up. Not so. Only those who are growing in their understanding of God's prophetic word receive more light. As we conclude this article, the point I wish to identify is in connection with the purpose of the testing time we are now in. If we are to walk in light the proceeding from the throne of God in the time when the persecutions of the past are repeated, we will need to master the prophetic word in advance of the crisis. In chapter 1, Daniel and the three worthies had already perfected their education before they went in to be tested by Nebuchadnezzar. For 40 days, Christ opened the prophetic word to the understanding of the disciples in advance of the 10 days where the disciples perfected their unity. Then came Pentecost, which typifies the Sunday law. In Daniel chapter 3, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego informed Nebuchadnezzar they needed no extra time, for they were already settled as to what they were to do in the Sunday law testing time. Their faithfulness was magnified when they walked in the furnace with Christ, and the message they had already settled into before the test was carried to all the then known world by all the visiting dignitaries that witnessed the miracle in the furnace. We will continue these thoughts in the next article.